Welcome back to the gospel. I swear this one show a week thing just feels like we are away from each other far too long, which is why starting next week, we will be back up to two shows. I'm sure you're as excited as I am. Vander will be back and we will be doing the fantasy football show earlier on in the week. So you will have two shows from us starting next week. Wanted to start the show off with that. With that being said, I am your host, Ace, the fantasy football fiend himself. And I have my guy, BK Wins. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, y'all.
Look, there's a lot going on right now. Like a whole lot going on right now. And we're going to talk about the NFL aspect of it in this show. You'll get the fantasy aspect of it in the next show. There's a ton of other stuff. Baseball is getting started. Tournaments are ending and the big tourney is about to start here pretty soon. So let's go ahead and kick it off with the good word of the week. Right after I remind you guys that we are now on YouTube at the Gospel STP. Again, that's at the Gospel STP. And if you have not joined the Facebook group yet, make sure you go do that. A lot of the information that we don't get the chance to go over on the show is right there for you. All the updates, all the latest and greatest free agency moves, wins, losses, all kind of great stuff going on there on the Facebook group. And again, that is the Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. BK, what's the good word of the week?
Well, there has been so many things that have happened in the NFL. So we're going to do a little free agency tracker plus a little noteworthy moves. We're going to start with, I think, the biggest move to me, which was the Bills extend star quarterback Josh Allen 6 years, $330 million. $330, Are you surprised that they dedicated so much money to him at this time with so much left on his contract? And so much so that he even had to come out and say, I'm not trying to kill the team by getting all this money.
Actually, I'm not. And what the Bills did was smart. It's the opposite of what the Cowboys have done lately. And if you actually look at the contract, he gets paid less per year than Dak Prescott does. So again, it's the smart way of doing business. If you know that's your guy and he's going to be your guy, lock him up before the market is reset yet again, because for quarterbacks, the market is never not reset. So whoever the next guy that's worth having is that's up for a contract, they're going to be the next highest paid. So they got out in front of it, similar to how Kansas City got out in front of it. And what seemed like an otherworldly contract for Patrick Mahomes actually ended up being a team-friendly deal when you consider some of the quarterbacks that ended up getting paid more than him.
Agreed. So the Bengals franchise star receiver T. Higgins yet again. Will this be a precursor to an actual deal with them, or is he officially on the block?
Yes. Here's how I'll answer that. I believe that there aren't too many players on too many teams that are just hands off. So if the right deal comes along, especially seeing as how they have to, quote unquote, not necessarily break the bank, but they have to give him a significant amount of money to keep him. And they've already indicated that they were going to break the bank. Another team that waited too long. We got to catch up here. I haven't seen any position get cheaper by waiting. So now they already indicated previously that they were going to make Chase the highest paid non-quarterback, and Crosby from the Raiders just reset that market after Myles Garrett reset the market. Like, it's, if you're the next guy, the team is going to have to pay more. So if I'm a team and I know I want to keep you, I will be chomping at the bit to get something done, because inevitably, I'm just going to have to, one or two things happen. Either you get hurt or I have to pay you more. One of those two things is going to happen. So, yeah. But as far as T. Higgins is concerned, you rarely see a wide receiver get franchise tagged twice, because they're essentially paying him this year, if he stays on the franchise tag, exactly what he was asking for. So what are we doing here? Not only that, but if you franchise tagged him, let me put it this way. The only reason it would make sense to franchise tag him is if you were entertaining trading him. Other than that, you would just work out the deal. Like, you get nothing added to your situation, and you can only franchise one player. So, in all honesty, you're taken away from your situation. I would have franchise tagged the defensive lineman, Hendrickson.
Yeah,
I would have franchise tagged him and just worked out the deal with Higgins, if working out a deal with Higgins is what I actually wanted to do, so I can retain both of their services. But it feels like it's, if I can't trade you for what I think you're worth, I'll hang on to you for one more year. And because I wasn't going to be able to pay you anyway, it won't matter that you walk away because I wasn't going to be able to pay you.
No, that makes sense. I know you brought up Myles Garrett, and, you know, I got to tell you, it's not often that I misread a situation, but I am shocked that the Browns were able to re-sign him 4 years, $160 million.
Matt, you just said why they were able to re-sign him. Nobody else is going to pay him. Here's the thing. The Browns just need players that are going to keep butts in the seats at this point. You don't have a quarterback. He's the best you got.
Well, especially with, you know, the potential for a new stadium, they need to make sure they have their star power. No, that makes sense.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we heard about Russell Wilson making a visit there today. I would not be surprised in the least if he ended up signing there, because Kirk Cousins is not going to be available, which was their plan A from Atlanta, unless you give up more than most teams are going to want to give up for a 1 or 2 year rental. So, yeah, I mean, the Browns are in a situation where they have to overpay the guys that are there, and most other guys don't want to come in unless they're getting that tax. It's no different than in basketball. Nobody wanted to come play with LeBron because nobody wanted to be in Cleveland. Just saying, putting it out there.
So a flurry of NFL moves. The Seahawks first trade Geno Smith to the Raiders. Then they acquire Sam Darnold. They sign him. And the Jets get Justin Fields. What do you make of that trio of quarterback moves?
Geno Smith move caught me by surprise. It really did. Sam Darnold, unfortunately, well, actually, let me finish my thought on Geno Smith. I think this is a prudent move by the Raiders. Where they want to be, they want to be in the building phase, not the creating phase. Based on the division that they're in, I think that there's realism that the odds of them winning the division aren't that great. What they want to see is progression. They'll grab a young guy or another guy to fill Geno's shoes here in a couple years, whatever the case may be. But Geno is a good quarterback. And now all they need is a good wide receiver, because they don't have a number one wide receiver right now. Sam Darnold, this is the carriage that I feel like is going to turn back into a pumpkin. You don't have Justin Jefferson or Addison or Hockenson or Aaron Jones now to cover up the warts that is your actual game. There aren't very many targets for you to throw to in Seattle. Like JSN, Jackson Smith and Jigba, he's great. He's one of my Buckeyes, one of my favorite Buckeye wide receivers. He's not going to make Sam Darnold look any better than what he is. I got a feeling that Seattle is going to have buyer's remorse faster than just about any other team. And when you look at the fact that they paid him more than they were willing to offer Geno, and Geno has consistently won games with a lackluster squad, Sam Darnold had a good year. I don't really know the thought process there in Seattle as far as Justin Fields is concerned. This is a move 100%. Made to attempt to appease Garrett Wilson. You're giving him his college QB. Whether or not that pairing is going to work out as well in the pros as it did in college, that's yet to be seen. I do believe we're going to see the best of Fields that we have seen. And I also believe that we're going to see him with the best wide receiver that he's had in his young career. So I do like that the Jets may have made a good decision by mistake. It's kind of what it feels like. So yeah, that's where I am as far as those quarterbacks are concerned. Yeah.
Yeah. So my take on that would be the following, right? So I think totally agree. Fields to the Jets makes sense. It fills a need. It appeases Garrett Wilson. It's kind of a win-win for the Jets there. It gives Fields a much needed fresh start. Pittsburgh wasn't the answer given their philosophy and their lack of weapons. So, and then when you look at the Seahawks, I was surprised by that too. The only thing that I can think of that triggered this is the Seahawks have been like a 9-win team the last 3 years. They're pretty much on the cusp of doing something, but not quite getting over the hump. Maybe they just felt like this is as far as Geno can take them and we need to see something else. Like this is, and I'm not saying that Geno is bad or it's his fault or anything like that. But I do think there's, we talk about this in coaching that coaches can only take certain teams so far and then they need someone else to get. I kind of feel like that's where we're at with Geno Smith. Like he's going to get you 8, 9, maybe 10 wins. And not much, you're not going to do much in the playoffs, and that's pretty much it. And if you want bigger aspirations, maybe, and by the way, for the record, just for you out there, please don't forget what I've said. I am no Sam Darnold fan. So I think this move is actually worse for them than had they kept Geno Smith. This was a mistake, and it's even a bigger mistake, to your point, Zay, because you don't have your top two weapons. DK Metcalf's gone to the Steelers, right? And then Tyler Lockett's gone. So your top two threats are gone. Hello.
They brought in Marquez Valdes-Scantling for him. Right. That's your new Justin Jefferson.
Great. Did they get him at Walmart?
Basically.
Like, did they get cotton candy and some Snickers with him at least? Because, like, literally this, I'm not sure what Seattle was thinking. I'm going to rephrase that. I don't know that Seattle was thinking. Like, this doesn't make a lot of sense for a lot of levels. You regressed at quarterback. You gave up.
Paid $100 million to do it.
Right. Like, this is absolutely, it makes no sense. And you know what? If I end up being wrong or we end up being wrong on this, we'll own it. But I don't think we are. This is a, especially in that division with those defenses, this is going to be a problem. And the Seahawks just got worse in a hurry.
There aren't very many upper echelon wide receivers still available. So if you're thinking that Marquez Valdes-Scantling and a couple of rookies are going to be the offense that you can trot out there and put up numbers, good luck with that. That's all I could tell you.
And then the last thing is, they just so that Raider fans, although this is probably, you'll probably have to give out my email for this. The reason why I haven't spent much time on them is truthfully, it doesn't matter. Look at their division. They got the Chiefs, the Chargers, and the Broncos. All double digit win teams. All teams are going to be as good or better next year. I think the Chargers and Broncos will be even better. They signed Evan Ingram at tight end. That fills a void that they need. The Raiders are so far behind those three teams, their head's spinning.
What they just did is ensured that people will remember Geno Smith in a dim light because his odds of doing better in Vegas than he did in Seattle are slim to none because of what you just said. So good luck with that situation, y'all.
Now, Zay, to my favorite part of this segment, and even the clap, we're going to talk about my Commanders. So, how about Washington? First, they trade for Debo. They literally give up a fifth-round pick, really, for him? And then, you talk about an all-in move. Left tackle, Laremy Tunsil, shoring up the line. Then they re-sign Bobby Wagner, re-sign Zach Ertz. But wait, they're not done. defensive tackle Javon Kinlaw and corner Jonathan Jones. What do you think about the Commanders?
I believe the Commanders have quietly had one of the best offseasons so far. They filled in several gaps. They ensured safety for their franchise quarterback. They ensured targets for their franchise quarterback. The defense got two, I'll label them as cornerstone pieces. Not necessarily the best, but able to fill voids that they had. Also understanding the coach that they have and the way he goes about coaching defenses tends to make individuals play a little bit better within his system than they are as an individual. He knows who he needs. Don't hear what I'm not saying, BK. He doesn't have the cachet yet, obviously, of Bill Belichick. But what Bill Belichick is able to do on defense is make guys that would otherwise probably not have a job, household names. And that's what that defensive coach in Dan Quinn is able to do. He can simply take guys that would have otherwise been Jags, just a guy, and turn them into a centerpiece for that level of the defense. And I believe that he's getting his type guys. And the defense that you saw turned around from week one to the end of the year last year was pretty much without any of his type guys. It was just the guys that he inherited.
Well, rounding out this first question, or at least first part, unfortunately, to my dismay, Zay, we're still talking about Aaron Rodgers. So I want to be clear to everyone before I ask or we talk about him. Please just retire. I don't want to talk about you. I don't want to think about you. You've stayed in the league way longer than you should have. Please just go. That being said, now that he's officially released and on the market, he's been linked to the Vikings, the Giants, the Steelers. Where do you think he ends up?
Well, unfortunately, BK, there's no way that he retires because there are teams that are vying for his services right now. And in typical Aaron Rodgers fashion, he's same old selfish Aaron Rodgers. Right now, what he's doing is he is hamstringing the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they're in a situation now where they may be stuck with Mason Rudolph because I don't see him choosing them. The Vikings are much further along as a team. And if Sam Darnold can do what he did last year with that team, and Aaron Rodgers is the narcissistic person we believe him to be, why would he not go to the place that made Sam Darnold look good so it could do the same for him? And it could be a, oh, well, see, it was them, not me situation. He can be where he is in his career currently and Justin Jefferson make it look like his yesteryear. Addison make it look like his yesteryear. Hockenson make it look like his yesteryear. Oh, and by the way, Aaron Jones, the guy that he used to actually be in Green Bay with, make it look like his yesteryear. So I don't see any way he doesn't choose the Vikings unless he's so narcissistic that he doesn't want it to be said that he followed in
Brett Favre's
footsteps, lockstep throughout the entirety of his career. The Vikings just make way too much sense. I'd rather be in the NFC than the AFC as far as playoffs and Super Bowl possibilities are concerned. I believe that Rodgers is still better than Sam Darnold. So if he can stay healthy, why wouldn't I believe that he can have a similar season to what Sam Darnold did? That's the go-to for me. And he's holding Pittsburgh again hostage. And now Fields is on the team. Wilson is either about to be in Cleveland or in New York. They're about to be stuck without a quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I laughed at the one team he's not going to is the Giants. Why would he go to the Giants, who are an awful team with little talent? Like, Why would you want to do that and have to deal with the Eagles in Washington when you're on an awful team? Like, he's not going there. The Steelers make sense because they need a quarterback. They're a 10-win team. They have talent on defense. You know, they were able to get Metcalf. So they have some pieces, parts there. But the Vikings make the most sense for four different reasons. One, they have a glaring need at quarterback. Two, they have a loaded roster that you pointed out. Jefferson, Addison, Hawkinson, Aaron Jones. Three, he gets two chances a year to stick it to his Packers. And I'm sure that is an added bonus. And four, I just think it makes the most logical sense because they're the best team that needs a quarterback where he can have a chance to, if I'm him, close my career with another championship. They're the closest team that he'll go to that is championship ready. So it makes the most sense.
And do you really want to go to a division with the other teams that you would have to put up with as far as the AFC North is concerned? If you can, I mean, I would rather deal with Chicago and Green Bay and even Detroit to a certain extent than having to deal with the Bengals and having to deal with Baltimore. Humble opinion.
Agreed. No, absolutely. Well, rounding out the good word, it was a very, very, very bad week for us Yankees fans, A starting pitcher, Gerrit Cole, out for the season due to Tommy John surgery. Of course, Luis Gil, former last year's Rookie of the Year, also out for 3 months. Where do the Yankees turn for rotation help? Trevor Bauer chimed in saying, hey, I'll come cheap to pitch there. Aaron Judge is pitching Alcantara. He wants him to come there. Cashman talked about Dylan Cease and trading for him. The Padres are trying to dump salary. Where do you think the Yankees go from here? Because being down what was supposed to be a huge strength with all these starting pitching has quickly become a problem.
Baseball is an uncapped sport, correct?
Yes.
Get them all. I'm sick of losing. The Dodgers would get them all if that's what they had to do. Like, I'm sick of being in reaction mode instead of action mode. Like, let's prepare and act like pitchers can get hurt sometime instead of being stuck without any pitchers because we didn't plan for pitchers to be hurt. Come on, people. Like, what are we doing here? Like, and what are we waiting on? For another team to have a pitcher get hurt too? And then we don't even have these guys to shoot? If Bauer is going to be cheap, I get him and at least one other. I'm getting Bauer. I'm trading for Cease. And Alcantara is still out there. Like, two of the three best guys out there available to you, you don't even have to trade for. So what are we waiting for? Are we going to wait until we get behind to then say, well, maybe we should do something about it? Let's be proactive for a change. How about that?
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, in the movie Bring It On, where they talk about be aggressive. George Steinbrenner is rolling around in his grave saying, like, because he would do exactly what you said. He'd literally go after Dylan Cease and he would get Alcantara. I mean, I'm not sure he'd get all three of them, but he would get two of them. You know, he would, you know, so.
Two of them are begging for a job and the third one doesn't have an old trade clause. What are we waiting for?
Right. So, and I mean, Bauer would be the cheapest and easiest of the three. You can't tell me you wouldn't take a flyer on him. So, yeah, they need to do something because if they don't, all the work they did in the offseason will be for naught because they're going to get lit up like a Christmas tree once the regular season starts. So let's hope they listen to us and get it together.
They won't.
No, they won't. All right, well, turning to the truth and nothing but the truth, Zay, one of our favorite segments. We're going to take a little bit of break from the gridiron and get back to the hardwood. We talked about this, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, but I'm going to ask, will the Cavs win 70 games? They're 55-10. They've won 15 in a row. They pulled a lot of these games out of their rear. But they only need to go 15-2 down the stretch. And before you answer, I'm going to throw out a little caveat. While they've won their division and they have a stranglehold on the number one seed in the East, they're only a game and a half over the Thunder for the best overall record to have home court in the finals should they get there. The question is will they win 70? Are they going to try to win 70? What do you think happens? Look into your crystal ball.
This is a lot of valid information you've presented me with, BK. And I'm glad that you dove as deep as you did. Doesn't make the answer any more difficult. Hell no. They're not doing that. No, absolutely not. And guess what? Yeah, they'll try, but they'll lose three games before they get deep enough into that schedule that quote unquote attempting to hit 70 becomes the talking point. So no, but I will say this. If I'm their coach, I don't know for 100% certain that I would want to do it. I'll tell you why. Teams that don't win often will take something like that and make that the cherry on their ice cream sundae for the season instead of what they get done in the playoffs. And I don't want you going into the playoffs being overconfident. I also don't want you to go into the playoffs feeling like you're playing with house money and it doesn't matter if you win or lose because what you did this year is already great.
Yeah, I think for me, so I'm going to answer this a few different ways. Can they win 70? Of course, mathematically they can. Will they, which is obviously the question, I don't think they will because the schedule lines up for them to be able to do it. I just don't think they're going to want to do it. And because here's what I look at. It's only been done twice. Obviously, the Unbeatables, aka the Lovables, the Chicago Bulls, 72-10, as they steamrolled through yet another title. And then, of course, the Warriors, 73 wins, lost in the finals, and ultimately their season meant nothing. So, if we're being honest, because as the Bulls always said, and I'm not saying this as a big fan, but what they factually said, it don't mean a thing if we don't win the ring. At the end of the day, you need to finish the deal. If you don't win the title, it doesn't matter. For the Cavs, I think it's very simple. They should have a very easy path as the top seed to the conference finals, where they're likely going to have to face the Celtics. For the Cavs, the most important thing is be healthy. Mitchell's had injuries in his past. Garland's had injuries. Okoro's been injured this year. They have other players who've been battling injury or have been injured. I would much rather them win 68 games and be healthy in the playoffs than win 70 and watch two of their players that matter derail their season. If Donovan Mitchell goes out for the year, that team will not beat Boston. Like, what if both him and Garland go out for different things? And again, and I only bring this up because I'm not trying to bring bad karma to Cleveland, but the last two NBA postseasons, we've sat and talked, Zay, about how the postseason has been marred by all these key injuries to star players. And so for the Cavs, the most important thing is you've locked up your division. You locked essentially, not technically, but for all intents and purposes, they've locked off the top seed in the East. You're going to have home court in the East. Whether you have home court in the finals or not isn't really going to make a difference. Rest your people and be healthy.
Yeah, especially since you're not going to make it to the finals. So, I mean...
Right, and that's my point. You're not going to be Boston.
I changed my answer, BK. I changed my answer. You just convinced me to go the opposite way. They don't have a chance at a championship, in my humble estimation. I don't care what you did in the regular season. You're not ready yet for a championship. Humble opinion. You're not going to make it to the finals. So the cherry on top of your season would actually be the 70 games.
So it's interesting because I'm going to, where I'm at odds on this is you hear all of you guys out there, but Zay, you specifically, you hear me week after week about just win, right? Win, win, win. And we talk about, you know, we hate to lose more than we like to win, and we love winning, right? We say this all the time. The Cavs do have a chance to have a historic season and win 70 games. Mm-hmm. Everything is broken right for them this year. They've pretty much stayed really healthy. They played great basketball. I don't think they're going to come close to being able to have this kind of season again. Not that they can't win 60 games, but they're not going to come close, in my opinion, to winning 70 again. This might be their best chance to do it. And to your point, I don't think there's much chance of beating the healthy Celtics in the conference finals. So why not go for it?
This would be the second best season in the history. It's already the second best season in the history of the Cavs. As far as I'm concerned, and I know you had some, you know, teams back in the day, you know, what's my boy's name? Price, 3-point specialist, you know, when them boys was playing and everything, that they had a few magical seasons, if you will. But other than winning the championship finally, this would have to go down as the second best season all time. It would have to.
No, in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, the Cavs were loaded with, you know, Nance and Doherty and Price and Elo and Hot Rod Williams. I mean, they were loaded with players. So, unfortunately, like many teams, a certain guy got in their way. But, and I do think actually a couple of those teams had a chance to actually win the title had they been able to kind of escape the cape. But in either case, they didn't, so it doesn't really matter. But they had very good teams that won 60 games and had a lot of success, to your point. More NBA. So the Suns are reportedly seeking 3 first-round picks and a young player in return for superstar Kevin Durant. Is Durant worth all that still? What are your thoughts and reactions to this?
Well, here's the thing, right? All first-round picks are not created equal. Most end-of-the-first-round picks don't pan out. And most teams don't really want to wait around to see if said picks will pan out. Picks are a lot more coveted in the NFL than they are in the NBA. Sometimes your literal number one can't-miss superstar turns out not to be what you thought they were going to be. And a guy that was in a position of really, quote unquote, not being that touted ends up bringing more to the table than a ton of the other guys drafted in front of them did. So if you have a chance to win now in the NBA and giving up the possibility of possibly drafting a good player is what you have to give up, not mentioning the fact that if the guy that you're getting is going to make you good to the point that those picks won't be worth much more than a quote-unquote high second-round pick anyway, if I can have Luka, LeBron, and KD, I don't care what the haters say. You can say what you want about KD. You can say what you want about LeBron. Most people don't have too much negative to say about Luka. Look, as a Lakers fan, forget them picks. 3, whatever. How have our picks panned out so far?
Not great.
Give me KD. If you can give me a KD and a LeBron and a Luka on the same team, you move 3 first and Dalton Connect to do it. Young star player, 3 first. Our first round picks are going to be within the last 5 picks of the first round. For all 3 of those picks anyway. And you can extend both KD and LeBron's careers. And you got 2 guys in Luka and LeBron that are not only scorers, but facilitators. And you have an elite scorer that you can't double in KD. Other than injury, nobody's beaten that team. So for my team, I would say it makes perfect sense. There's some other teams out there that because stars aren't going to stay with you very long, you'd be much better off keeping your picks. LA is the opposite.
No, I agree. Makes sense. Well said. You have me quiet. How about that? Turning to March Madness, it's upon us. We're going to talk a little bracketology, little bubble teams. Which of these men's basketball bubble teams will make the big dance? North Carolina. Some of you might have heard me talk about that once or twice. Arkansas, Baylor, West Virginia, Oklahoma, San Diego State, Boise State, Xavier, and Wake. I actually removed our Buckeyes because they took a tough loss against Indiana, and I think it cost the Buckeyes their bubble burst with that loss to the Hoosiers. So I wiped them out.
Agree. 100% agree. Unfortunate, but agree. There's several reasons why I believe it's going to be North Carolina. One, they just beat one of the teams that were on the bubble with them in Wake. You also just won a championship in a storied division. And the way you looked at the end of the season in comparison to the stumbles and falls that were made towards the beginning of the season, night and day. So if I'm judging you based on where you are in comparison to these other teams, and I'm looking at the dollars and the cents, North Carolina just makes the most sense. They're not going to have the draw that these other teams, they'll have a draw that these other teams won't have as far as viewership is concerned and as far as fandom is concerned. In humble opinion, I think they're the better team. So for my money, I got to let North Carolina Tar Heels in there.
Is there anybody else on the bubble here that you would also put in?
Xavier, I can't tell you the number of tournaments in full disclosure, has nothing to do with this year's team. I just can't tell you the number of tournaments that I have seen going back years that Xavier has made something shake even when they weren't supposed to. The pedigree is what puts them as the next team up for me. Pedigree and coaching is what puts them the next team up for me.
No, that's fair. So I'll save Carolina for last. Wake is out. They were already on life support. Today's loss ended their season. Xavier lost a tough game to Marquette today. They had that one and lost a close one at the end. I still think they'll get in. Boise State was on the wrong side of the bubble, but what they beat San Diego State today in the conference tournament. So that definitely helped them. I think West Virginia is safely in. Baylor lost today against Texas Tech. They're in a tough spot. Arkansas lost a really tough game today to Ole Miss. They were down. They fought their way back. But I think that Arkansas will get in. And North Carolina, I think, I know that I'm going to get the bias stuff here, but objectively speaking, North Carolina is a tournament team. I know that if you want to keep them out, you're going to look at their quad one wins and they're 1-10 or 1-11 or whatever they are. 1 and not enough. I get that. But when they were losing those games early in the season to Kansas and Alabama, teams that are ranked pretty good, right? Duke got them twice. North Carolina's not the same team. They're a better team now. They made some lineup changes. They've gone smaller. They're knocking down the three better. So they've had players step up. They're playing, think about it like this. They were 13-7 in the ACC. Like, you're literally winning two-thirds of your games, almost two-thirds of your conference games. You won more than 20 games. You blew out Notre Dame by 20. You beat Wake Forest today by 9. They've won 8 of their last 9 games. They're playing their best basketball down the stretch. And they get a wounded Duke team tomorrow, or for purposes of when this gets released, today, they get a Cooper Flagg, their star freshman, badly rolled his ankle, was hobbling around. They had to pull him in a wheelchair. The coach has pretty much said he's not out for tomorrow. Their other player, I forget his name, defensive stopper for Duke, just came back a week ago from a separated shoulder, separated it again. His season's done. So Carolina has a great chance to win tomorrow. I think they're safely in. If they win tomorrow, it becomes lockdown. They're going to be in. And if they make it as an 11 seed or even the 12 seed, because we always talk about 5-12 matchups, could you imagine seeing Carolina as an 11 seed and you're a 6 seed? You don't want any part of them at all.
Not at all. I definitely see where you're coming from as far as that's concerned. Yeah, that's why they're on my radar as far as being just checking several boxes as far as being the next best team up, if that makes sense. Completely agree. Hey, I'm going to throw a curveball here. Pardon the pun.
Love it.
I got a question for you, BK.
Hit me.
By all accounts, it looks as if the 49ers are now in rebuild mode based on all of the players that they got rid of. How does it make sense to not get rid of Christian McCaffrey at the running back position, which is normally the first position that you attempt to save money at, if you're cutting other positions like wide receiver, defensive line, offensive line, et cetera, et cetera? How does it not make sense to move on from Christian McCaffrey, who will be a 28, 29-year-old running back, if you're lucky enough to complete the retooling or rebuild in the amount of time that you think it's going to take, which is probably, in their estimation, only a year or two?
So, great question. And I guess my feeling on this is one of the things that your old GOAT head coach, Mr. Belichick, used to always do is he was a master of getting rid of a player a year early, right? Like, before the decline happened, he was good at just trading you right at the right time before people saw the decline. I say that to say that McCaffrey's value isn't anywhere near its peak right now because of the injuries. So I think if I'm the Niners, and I don't know this, but what I'm guessing their hope is that trading him is probably on their radar and should be, given the rebuild that you alluded to. But I think they want to see him healthy and play games and show that he can play so he'll increase his value. Because I don't think they're going to get as much for him now as they could if he was healthy and performing at his usual productive rate.
I mean, I definitely hear that argument and understand that argument. But running backs aren't highly sought after a certain age. And even making it through this season unfazed, which is also unlikely to happen given the injuries that he's had and the age that he's going into. If I'm not mistaken, I want to say like he'll be like, I think 27 maybe? I think he'll be like 27 this year, which I mean, no. I'm sorry. He's 28 already. So he's a little older than I thought. So he may actually end up being 29 by the time the season, where he's already 28. I'm not exactly sure what his birthday is, but he'll be a lot closer to 30 if you go through another season. And then no one's trading for, I don't care what his name is, no one's trading anything significant for a 30-year-old or close to 30-year-old running back. The Eagles didn't even trade anything significant, if you will, for Saquon Barkley. It'd be a similar situation. I believe what you can get for him today is the same thing you're going to be able to get for him next year. That's if he gets through the full season. He gets hurt again, you get nothing other than to pay his paycheck without him being around for the rebuild. And you already have another guy in the rookie. Garindo, I think is that same is. But you already saw what he could do when given the opportunity. Is he CMC? No. But it doesn't seem to matter who the running back is in that system. So if I'm getting rid of all of these guys and doing a rebuild, and that's like my most expensive piece, and it's definitely expendable because running backs are, let's face it, pretty easy to come by. I don't understand a rebuild with a aging running back as your centerpiece. That just doesn't click for me, but who am I?
No, that makes perfect sense. I guess I'm going to add a question to that, though, which is, for me, knowing that the Niners have been so good under Shanahan, and I know their season got ravaged by injury last year, my question is if you're healthy, this team is really good.
No, it's not.
Why are you trying to blow them up?
Well, that's just it, though. They aren't really good. They haven't been consistent. Like, it, the same way you felt about the coaching situation is how I feel about the players that the 49ers have had. You've milked that cow as much as you possibly can. They're not going to get you over the finish line. You're going to have to do something different, which is the conclusion that they've come to as well. And if you're going to do something different, and it's going to minimally take you 2 years to do it, no one just rebuilds in 1 year. You're going to be banking on the 30-year-old running back to be the one that gets you through? Like,
unless you're Washington.
Here's the thing with that. We know their quarterback isn't about to change. They don't have a chance of getting to Jaden Daniels. They don't have a chance of getting another coach. And look, don't hear what I'm not saying. I understand how good he is, but he's showing himself to be Moses, getting you to the promised land. It can't get you into it. To it, but not into it. It's levels. What team has he gotten into it? None. At some point in time, we got to understand that and just label this thing as being a thing. Great systems, very few championships, very few Super Bowls where you've lost in the championship and you were right there. I think the next big move is the coach, because the GM, for all intents and purposes, and I know that's hard to hear. I know Shanahan would be immediately picked up by somebody else, no different than Mike Tomlin. If Tomlin had the groceries that guy has with the 49ers, if Tomlin had that team, are you serious? Tomlin hasn't lost with far worse teams. So just putting that out there, just saying.
Fair enough. Well, we're at, I think, one of both of our favorite parts of the show.
Absolutely.
This week's top five something all-time favorite things of something is the top five things that we would change about baseball. Zay, I'm curious to what you have. You start us off. What's your number five?
So number five for me isn't, it's a change, but without the answer to how to change it, if that makes sense, which is more points need to be scored. I don't care how you go about doing it. I don't care if you let them take steroids again and people start popping off home runs. I don't care if you no longer have a first baseman, and now as long as you get a hit on the ball and the second baseman can't get to first base, you automatically advance. That's a stupid idea, I know. But whatever you got to do for more points to be scored, figure it out and do that. So more points scored is the first thing that I would. What's your number five?
I'm not mad at that. Number five, I'm going to propose that we do something that hasn't been done since 1893. I want to move the mound back. No more 60 feet, 6 inches. Arms have become too good. They can throw too hard, too many 100-mile-an-hour pitches, too much movement, too much velo, too much spin rate, all that stuff. We're going to make it easier for the hitters. We're going to get more runs, more offense. We're going to move the mound back.
And this is why we're a good team. I set it up. You knock it down. I come up with the ideas. You come up with the implementation. It just works, people. We didn't plan that, by the way. Number four, number four for me, you get one timeout at bat. Forget all this walking away from the plate crap. You get one time to do that. Outside of that, be ready to hit the ball when the pitch comes.
No, I'm with you. Speed up the game. Nobody wants to watch you stand around.
Exactly. So that one I had actually, instead of just saying speed up the game, I actually gave the way that I would go about doing so. But yes, that change would be directly impacting the speed of the game. I don't have 5 hours to sit around and watch a game. I just don't.
No, I'm all for it. For me, my number four is please stop in the regular season in extra innings, starting in a runner on second base. Please stop this. What are we doing? Like, this is ridiculous. Just stop. That's my number four.
Yeah, my number four, no OT. Mm. Why do I care if baseball ends in a tie and you have 5,000 games? Let it in the tie, whatever. It actually would, by the end of the season, make it a little bit more intriguing. You'd have a lot of teams that are a lot closer to each other as far as the various races are concerned. So, and actually, let me go ahead and throw out my next one. Less games. I get it. But baseball is all about stats. And how are you going to break records if you don't play the same amount of games? Here's a novel idea to kill two birds with one stone. We'll all remember the old records, but why don't you give every single current and new player an opportunity to create history versus rewriting history? And you create a whole new set of history books of pitching, batting, steals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, within, let's say, 150 games played instead of the almost 200 that you have now. You can compare the race, if you will, extrapolate what it would have looked like if you went out to the 182 and give people their kudos that way. But yeah, you'll hear a little bit more about some of that in a few moments, but that's where I am on that. What you got up next, BK?
So for me, my number three, this is the one thing that I know will lengthen the game, but you guys all know me well enough to know that I'm all about strategy and being analytical and being intentional. Can we do away with the ridiculous 3-batter minimum that pitchers have to face? It's ridiculous to have people pitch to 3 batters. That's crazy to me. Let's go back to how it used to be. If I want to make 17 pitching changes and I blow through that in 2 innings because I do that, then so be it. But you can't keep doing that. I'm just not a fan of it. I don't like the rule. It makes, and I understand that it speeds up the game. So I do understand that, and I'm all for speeding up the game. But at times we have to rein it in.
Not mad at that at all. Not mad at that at all.
What you got at number two?
Number two, this would be a lot more difficult to go about doing than less games, less innings. Again, you gotta, sometimes less is more. And just, we gotta be okay with that sometimes. Things don't need to be prolonged in situations in most cases for you to really get out of it what you want it to get. And I just feel like the game is just too long. And there are incremental changes that you can make to change the speed of the game. But the only thing that's truly going to change how long the game takes is then less innings. And then if let's say we went to six innings, I'll give you three innings of overtime. The game ends at nine innings, worst case scenario. That's my capitulation, if you will. Our worst case is nine innings because people got stuff to do, man. I'm just saying.
So my number two is, please, let's have an automated strike zone. And the best thing about this is I don't have to hear about the Umpires Association because the home plate umpire will still be there. He'll have an earpiece and he'll be able to announce ball or strike as it's relayed to him. So he still has a job and we'll get the calls right, which is a win-win for everybody. Because I'm tired of watching baseball and these home plate umpires who stand on one side behind the catcher and can't see on the other side of the plate to save their life and call all these pitches wrong. Please just stop. Automated balls and strikes, earpiece, he'll announce, he'll have a microphone, earpiece, call balls and strikes. Ball one, ball three, strike two. So much easier. Just make it happen.
I feel so much in lockstep with you in that answer that it's my number one. So what's your number one?
My number one is something that you brought up. And I know that the Players Union will hate it. And I know MLB will hate it because it's all about dollars and cents and losing. It's all about money. For the love of God, can we have less games? Please. 162 is ridiculous. They start spring training in February. The season starts the end of March. It's going to start in 10, 15 days, 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Okay. The season ends now in November. I'm just going to say what everyone out there is probably already thinking. No one's going to want to invest this much time in baseball to watch a pitcher throw a ball, a catcher catch it, a hitter try to hit the ball, and all these other players stand around doing nothing unless it's hit to them, which it usually isn't because they either strike out, walk, or hit the ball out of the ballpark. So please cut down the games. And by the way, since, you know, I like suggesting things, I would accept cutting it down from 162 to 150 as a starting point. But in my perfect world, I would like to get it down from 162 to 120.
My perfect world, 100. Let's make it nice and easy. Nice round number. 100 games. That's all. Like, what? Just saying 100 sounds like a ton of games because it is. 100? 100, like, I don't know. BK, I just.
Well, the sad thing.
To my rant now, so I'll digress.
The scary thing, Zay, about it is, to your point, is 100 games is still 18 more than the NBA and hockey. It's still almost 20 more than basketball and hockey. And those seasons are too long.
And then you can nestle it in into a sweet spot where you can get more eyeballs. Because guess what? Come November, everybody's watching the NFL. That's why your numbers are so horrible in the postseason. Everyone switched over to the NFL. Let me shut up because I'm not going to have a rant in a second. So, so yeah. That's where we'll end. A top five all time of something. All right, BK. I know we're coming in hot next week with the games and everything as far as the tournament and all that kind of good stuff getting into full gear. Are we saving our winnings from the NFL season yet another week? Or is there something out there other than a random NBA game that you had your eye on?
We're gonna hold off one more week. I get no credit for after the fact, but I will tell you that as you guys can probably see my shirt here as I hold it up, it's crazy to me because on my on my account, the Zips were a 9.5-point favorite a couple days ago over Bowling Green. And that line made no sense. Like, Akron's 17-1 in the conference. Bowling Green was 8-10, barely a 500 team. Akron's 25-6. Like, they've lost one game in 2025. Like, anyway, the line miraculously moved from 9.5 to 12 this morning. But I did take 9.5. I don't get any credit for that for purposes of this. But that was one that tomorrow they're an 8-point favorite over Toledo. That's one you'll want to keep your eye on. They did sweep Toledo in the regular season. They beat him by 7 points at the Jar, which is Akron's home court, where they were undefeated this year. They won at Toledo by 9. Toledo had to go into overtime to beat a very tough OU team today. I think they're going to have a hard time dealing with the Zips tomorrow. So just something to keep an eye out there. But no official plays. We're going to roll it back to next week. Which, by the way, you will also get a ton. And I'm going to also say this. I know we don't like excuses on this show, Zay, but you've done this a few times. I've been feeling like absolute crap. So I didn't have the time to do the research. So my apologies to all of you out there trying to make money. I'll accept all the hate email. But you guys can count all your winnings in the meantime, and we'll rendezvous next week. And there'll be plenty of games for you to bet on.
I love it. Gotta love it. So let's go ahead and go to the end of the show as we round it out with our Can't Miss Weekly Rants. This week for me, good people, was pretty plain and simple. Let's stop hiding behind records to not make changes that we know would make games better. Adding more games to the NFL just made sense, and I don't believe they're done. Forget the records. I don't care that it's going to become easier to beat old school records. The opposite and equal is the same with baseball and basketball. Too many games. I don't care that you won't be able to break records. And you should care that more people will be watching your sport so that people will actually care about the records that have already been created. Because right now you're going the opposite way. Before that trade that brought Luka to the Lakers, viewership and several of the other trades as well that went down at the deadline, viewership in the NBA was at an all-time low. They had to make a pimp decision and make some unorthodox moves. I don't think MLB is ever going to be on the level that it was once on, but people don't enjoy sports the same way that they used to. Baseball is not a TV sport. It's just not. If you know everything you're looking for, you would still enjoy a day out in the park more so than looking at 9 innings and watching commercials on TV. It's just a different feel to it. If you're a baseball fan, a true baseball fan, you probably went to a few games as a kid. Most people don't become baseball fans watching the game on TV. Didn't happen that way for most. Basketball, same thing. If you're going to sit your stars so much that it actually has a name attached to it, just lessen the game so people can get what they paid for, barring an actual injury. Go figure. Like, at some point you become so saturated that it becomes the adverse of what you intended, which was more money. Because if less people show up, you still have the same total attendance at the end as if you had less games, but more people at said games. So let's stop hiding behind records as the reason not to make corrections to improve sports that we know will be more effective and efficient by making said changes. That's my rant. And in the interest of full disclosure, I didn't have a rant when we started the show, and that just came to me midstream. So, yes, but I'm very much passionate about that.
You know, I'm impressed, Zay. Like, you're starting to become as wordy as I am now. I'm rubbing off on you. But very well said. So mine is going to have actually nothing to do with sports. As you all know, St. Patrick's Day is upon us. It's a festive time. It's a lot of fun. People be enjoying their favorite sports. Team March Madness is upon us. The weather's getting a lot better. I mean, even back at home in Cleveland, it was in the 60s today. So weather is getting better. The days are longer. It's sunny longer because of, you know, we lost that hour and all those things. But here's the thing. I want you guys all to have fun. I want you to go out and have fun, enjoy your friends. I want you to enjoy your favorite team and cheer them on, yell at them, cheer them, whatever you need, coach them, whatever you need to do. But I'm also going to caution you, don't let one more drink be your last. Please be careful. Have a designated driver. Use Uber, use a taxi. Call one of your friends, neighbors, relatives. I promise you they'd much rather take that call late at night than never get one again. Please do the right thing. And you don't want to mess up your life or someone else's. So please have fun, but do it the right way.
And that, my friends, is the definitive truth. That'll wrap it up for this week. We will be back to you early in the week next week with a little bit of fantasy talk. I am waiting with bated breath to get back to talking fantasy because so much has happened in the NFL that, we got a lot to talk about. So make sure that you subscribe or follow right now. I'm not even going to tell you what day it's going to be because guess what's going to happen? You're either going to be late or you're going to catch it right on time because you're following and subscribing and you got a notification. You choose. We all got to make pimp decisions in life. This is one of them. We're out for today. We'll see you early next week. And remember, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. Later, y'all.